It was historic. We've never had an agreement like this on anything in the past. The Kyoto Agreement in the mid-90s basically, I think, had about 30 or 35 countries who signed up to it. And some of those actually dropped out over the years. So that really didn't deliver very much. But this is different. The expectations are different. So I think historic is actually a good way to describe it.
And how happy were you with the result? Because it did seem, I mean, from our own point of view, our own Enda Kenny seemed to be saying one thing and then doing something else. There didn't really seem to be a consistent message. Is there a fear that everybody will say, oh, yes, we're all on board, except we need this exception, and everybody needs an exception?
Yeah, well, I suppose when you have so many countries with a lot of different vested interests, there is going to be something of the lowest common denominator about the agreement. Now, I don't actually think it is the lowest common denominator. There's a lot of very good stuff in there. Basically, the ambition is to keep temperature rise well below 2 degrees, and they've mentioned ideally 1.5 degrees, and that would be a really positive thing. I think where it falls down, perhaps, is in specifying a number of things which we would have regarded as important. Issues around food security, for instance. So the very poorest people on the planet who live off small-scale farming, there's very little there saying that we will protect the rights of these people and we will protect their ability to produce food. The agreement talks about food production, but that could be food produced in Canada and shipped overseas, which is not an ideal solution, because ultimately we want people to be able to produce their own food sustainably, close to where they live, and otherwise you're talking about the breakup of communities. Some doubts as well about the extent to which there is enough of a financial package there for the poorest countries to help them to adapt to climate change. And also there isn't very much on technological transfer, and I think that's something that we need to see a lot of over the next 15 to 20 years. So a lot of good things, and I think the fact that the agreement was reached is very positive. The French did a very good job. But I think we will now, every 5 years, have sessions of all of those countries where they will recommit. They will assess what has been happening over the previous 5 years. They will make assessments over what levels of commitments are required to really keep the temperature close to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. And that's really important. And that was one of the things that we saw as important in any agreement as well.
And what can Ireland do? What's Ireland's biggest input? Because we aren't one of the best in Europe. We'd be maybe one of the worst offenders in Europe. We're certainly better than America, but we're not exactly a model country in terms of our carbon footprint. And yet, we're such a green country. So you'd think we should be.
Yeah, our emissions as a country are high. In fact, people on the island of Ireland produce as many emissions as 400 million of the world's poorest people. So that's a dramatic level of emissions, and it just shows you the lifestyle that we have, heavily based on fossil fuels, carbon. If you look at our transportation, if you look at how inefficient our buildings are, if you look at how we produce our energy with, you know, turf-fired, coal-fired power stations. If you look at our agriculture and the emissions, the methane in particular that comes from agriculture. So between now and 2050, we as a nation are going to have to dramatically change how we do all of those things. Our buildings are going to have to become much more energy efficient, and government is going to have to put money into retrofitting of homes so that ordinary people can put in perhaps solar panels and can make their homes more energy efficient, better forms of insulation and all of that. We're going to have to transform how we transport ourselves, more public transport. It's going to have to be based on electricity. And as the batteries get better and better, electric cars will become more and more part of the picture. And also how we produce energy as well, we're going to have to move away from using fossil fuels to produce energy to more sustainable forms. And we're also going to have to reduce our emissions from agriculture, our carbon emissions and our methane emissions. So all aspects of Irish society, all economic aspects of life in Ireland will have to change and play their part. Because we're part of the European Union, and what we have agreed to is a 40% reduction in our emissions by 2030.
And do you think that's achievable? Because that's a lot of things there for people to take on board, isn't it?
Yes. We now have a climate bill which has passed through all stages in the Oireachtas. So when the President signs it into law in January, it will be the law, and the government then will be legally obliged to meet those targets, those EU targets. And yeah, we have time, but you know, we have to get started. And you know, the Taoiseach did say in Paris that we have lost a decade. Now, he was basically saying that we were too poor during the last 10 or 12 years to do anything about our emissions. I don't agree with that. Many, many poorer countries are already doing more about their carbon emissions. So there is a big challenge there, and hopefully when we have the new government after the next election, that that will be one of the priorities, and that whatever programme for government is agreed, that responding to climate change and playing our part in reducing global emissions and keeping temperatures at about 1.5 degrees of warming will be an important part of the government's action plan for the next 5 years.
And what you mentioned as well there, the agribusiness, and there was really no specific commitment there in the sense that for the other areas, for fossil fuels and better, more efficient homes, there have been certain commitments and there have been certain grants. But the our agribusiness is really been overlooked, where it's kind of business as usual. In fact, if anything, they're looking at increasing quotas, they're looking at increasing production. So how is that going to play out?
Well, the government says that it will negotiate hard for agriculture in the European Union in 2016, and that we will do more in other areas, perhaps, so that we can be let off the hook a little bit in agriculture. And, you know, other countries with other vested interests will probably be doing the same for their own particular industry or whatever it is. My own view is that over the next 35 years up to 2050, we are going to have to reduce our emissions from agriculture. I'm not an expert on how to do that, but there are experts around the country in Teagasc and in university departments, and I have no doubt within departments of government in agriculture as well, who know how to do this. And I have no doubt that during that time frame, we will have to reduce our agriculture emissions as well.
And of course, TROCRA is a Christian, it's a Catholic organisation. What role do Catholics, Christians, religions have to play in the whole climate change debate?
The role of religion is very important because there is that sense of the common good, the dignity of each and every person. But not only that, there is also very much within Catholic social teaching and within the teachings of the other major religions, a very strong sense of care for creation. And that means not just humanity, but our environment. It means all living creatures. It means the entire ecosystem. And Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si, which he published in June of this year, is very strong on that. And I think that was actually very useful in terms of the Paris Agreement. It was brilliant to have that document where the Pope is basically saying, this is our moral duty. We cannot continue to treat the planet as a dumping ground, to continue to spew carbon into the atmosphere, to destroy plant and animal life. I read something recently from the World Wildlife Foundation that since 1970, more than 50% of all the Earth's animals, birds, fish, insects, reptiles have disappeared. And some species have disappeared completely. Now, if that scale of destruction of the resources of the planet were to continue, I mean, who knows what the future would be like. So I think Pope Francis has really played a critical role. And that's been great for us as well, because it gives us that sense of momentum and that this is an important issue. And I think it validates the fact that we have been working on this issue for a number of years.